Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show podcast. Shout out to the underdogs, my people, and the occasional Trump supporter that might have accidentally found the show. You've made it to the right place if you want to get personal about the news and the culture. Please enjoy this mini episode of the Gregory Neesmith Show.
Let's get into villains of vilify. Who saw Black Panther? I will admit, I was a little late to the party. As some of you know, I'm not a big movie goer. In the past 2 years, I've only gone to the theater to see two movies. That's it. Just two. In 2017, I saw Get Out in the theater. And in 2018, so far, the only movie I've seen in the theater is Black Panther. And full disclosure, I only recently saw it. It took me a little while, but I got there because the movie's on my thing. But I was like, I got to go see it. Shout out to Naveen for going to see it with me. And it was her fourth time seeing it. So shout out to her supporting Black Panther. I'm going to have to go see it again. Make sure I give it some additional support. And for all of you who have seen it, you're not alone. It has made $1 billion globally already and still counting. Record-breaking so far. It was the top February domestic debut ever, bringing in $202 million in its first 3 days and $242 million in its first 4 days debuting in February. A record! And its 3 day start is number 5 all time of all domestic launched movies. It also is number 1 for the biggest Monday ever. It's also number 1 for a non-holiday third weekend of box office sales. Basically, it's a record-breaking movie. Right? The list goes on of all the records it's broken. And it's a movie that was celebrated, right? A lot of just beautiful black folks on the screen doing stuff in Wakanda and in the motherland. Now, you know, it still felt a little odd to me that during Black History Month, the most celebrated thing going on felt like it was a movie, which is fiction. And I know art imitates life and life imitates art. And, you know, Black Wakanda's cool. I also think Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma is cool, too. And that's a place that I dream of making a comeback. Wakanda never existed, but Black Wall Street did. But I digress. I'm still a big fan of Black Panther, and I loved it and what it represented. Because as we know, there's things called in arts and entertainment and literature called the mirror versus the window. And oftentimes, as underdogs, especially for some of my people out there, we grew up, especially in the mainstream, consuming a lot of things that are from the window's perspective. They help us see out beyond our world. And while that is of value, because as you know, it's not about either or, I'm a believer in both. So the window is a great thing to get to see things that maybe you or I didn't see growing up. Exposure is a big deal. It's one of the unwritten rules of underdog stuff, right? To go from underdogs to champs is to get exposed to things because we do better when we know better. All the skills are there. Sometimes it's just access that's missing. And at the same time, the mirror is important too. It's a big deal to go read a book or to go see a play or to go see a movie. And it's a mirror. You look and you see people that look like you, that got swag like you, that talk like you, that move like you. And that is a big deal too. And so what I appreciate about Black Panther is that it wasn't about the window. For me, it was actually, in this case, a mirror, which is cool. And I know a lot of you felt the same way. And on top of that, the reality is there's a lot of folks that got employed because of it, black director, writers, actors. So it's a big deal, not just in fiction, but also in reality. And like most good movies, there's some complexity to it, right? Good writing leads to good characters, which leads to good debate. And so I wrote a post earlier this week about a character that caught my attention in the movie. And his name was Eric Killmonger. And I wrote a simple post. The post was literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 words. And the post said this. No pictures, no links, no nothing. Just 8 words. It said, Eric Killmonger was not a villain. he was fill in the blank. That's it. That's all I wrote. I just wrote Eric Killmonger was not a villain. He was fill in the blank. And it was interesting to see the responses. One person, Mr. Polson, wrote, Eric Killmonger was like Magneto. Glenn wrote, Eric Killmonger was someone with a valid point, but ruined it because he was also a complete sociopath. JP writes, Eric was a tyrannical dictator, and his villainy, I can't even say that word. He became a villain specifically. It occurred when he ordered the destruction of the remaining heart-shaped flowers, herbs, so that no one but he could ever have the powers. Ms. Hopkins writes, Eric was a young man without proper positive guidance. Orion said he was an anti-hero. I had to Google that because I wasn't quite sure what that meant. But an anti-hero is a central character in a story or film or drama who lacks conventional heroic attributes. Paul said Eric was right, but he was misguided in how to prove it. JP says Killmonger was the physical embodiment of a perspective marginal of a people marginalized by the greater population. And he talks about this fact that the greater population was physical embodiment of a perspective marginalized by the greater population as it inspires dialogue, strategy, and correction through means often visualized as revolutionary when it really should be considered as empowerment for the oft-disenfranchised. Bernice says Eric was a victim of post-traumatic syndrome. He wanted to see his father. Hey, say it again, Bernice. There are some things that happened to us as kids that we still haven't recovered from. He's not the only one. Tavion says he was a product of his environment. Someone else said he was Malcolm X. Keon says he was vilified. Kevin says he was a hero. And what I said to folks is that I, first of all, thank people for sharing. And also let folks know that I asked the question because I'm still processing my answer to the question too. And I wanted to see what you thought. So far, I think Eric was angry. I think he was frustrated. I think he was smart, militant, a revolutionary, an anti-hero. I think he was seeking revenge. I think he was a tyrannical dictator. I think he was a villain in the end. But sometimes art imitates life. So I know the question that I asked about Eric has real implications, right? It has real implications for how we see people in the real world who might have some of Eric's story in their life. I'm starting to think that calling him only a villain is an incomplete answer and jumps to the ending without telling the entire story. That's where I'm at right now. It's interesting to see so many perspectives just from one character. But for me, he isn't just a villain. What are your thoughts? Did you see Black Panther? First of all, I'll give you a lot of guts if you would actually call up right now and tell me that you didn't see Black Panther, but it's all right. I didn't see it till late, so I can't be too mad at you. But if you saw Black Panther, and you know, we don't just commentate, we get personal about things going on in society and culture. What grabbed your attention about this character? Was he a villain, or was he more than that? Is it possible that there's underdogs out there who have a complicated path and story? And that it's not just one thing or the other. And I'm not the only one talking about this. There's been some other people talking about whether he was a villain or not. And it goes a little something like this.
Eric Killmonger is absolutely a villain because, for sure, he has killed incessantly. All he knows is violence. All he knows is war. All he knows is destruction. And in everything that we see him do, he's in pursuit of those things. Those are very easily, just to open it up, those are villainous acts to want to destroy and to want to take away and remove. That is in no way heroic or even neutral.
I mean, that's one point of view. And then there's some folks saying this.
My opening case for Eric Stevens, I would not call him Killmonger because he was branded Killmonger by the CIA, is that he is of royal bloodline. He was ripped away from his family. His father was murdered. His father died in his arms. He was raised in the mean streets of Oakland. He made it out of that. He got to MIT. He got himself a degree. He graduated MIT at 19, went on to become a Navy SEAL, a decorated Navy SEAL, went on to work for the CIA. All of the killing that he did was sanctioned and for his country and was all at the orders of someone else. It's not like he's just a serial killer, a mass murderer. When he returned to Wakanda, he was well within his rights to challenge for the throne. And he did challenge for the throne, and he won the throne, rightfully. And what is Eric's biggest drawback? That he wants to help his homies, that he wants to help the world, that he wants to stop seeing his people defeated? If that's a villain, then call me the bad guy.
Villain or vilified. Killmonger said his purpose was to liberate black people all over the world. This has people questioning if he was a bad guy to begin with. So I want to know, because sometimes underdogs, we get vilified. We get called the villain. Remember Malcolm X? Remember Huey Newton of the Black Panthers, ironically enough? I sure as heck remember times of them being considered the villain and being vilified. Remember Martin Luther King? People forget, in the 60s, two-thirds of Americans hated Martin Luther King. Considered him a villain. He was vilified. I bring this up because I know we're talking about a movie, but sometimes art imitates life. Life imitates art. And sometimes how we see stuff going on in the movies is actually also how we see stuff going on in the real world. So I bring up Eric Killmonger, not because of Eric Killmonger, but because parts of his story represent stories of real people in real life. And I'm tired of folks sometimes just taking the extreme of this or that and not looking at the total story. With that, let's go to the phone lines. I think it's Deborah from Manhattan.
Hi, Ugly.
Yes, talk to me.
I don't think he was made in America. So when people want to start talking and throwing words around, he was made in America. But with all of that said, there was a balance. And so if you want to look at him good versus bad, fine. But like you said, this young other person said he was a royal blood, and he was as smart and he was as brilliant, but he was dirty. He was dirty, and he had been so. I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, not knowing, and then having to deal. Look at him versus the brother from Africa. They had no reason to be angry. They had what they were supposed to have. He didn't have what he was supposed to have. Look at how disrespectful he was to women.
Very disrespectful to women. And
he was very disrespectful. I mean, he grabbed this woman by the throat. He was willing to take the plant, that purple plant, and get rid of it. Had that sister not saved it, you know, God knows what would have happened. He didn't care. He went there to destroy. So there was someone who said, well, hey, if it was me, I would have done the same thing. Well, maybe you would have if you had the experience that he had. But I tell you one thing, this dude could read and write. And a whole lot of people out here who have problems, they need to learn that Eric went and got himself an education.
Damn.
Okay, I'm just sorry that it had to end the way it did. But there's one thing that Eric would not have done that the brother who did, I would not have gone to the UN and shared with anybody. But I said, well, it makes it very, very interesting, because for another episode or another comic strip, you know, the CIA and the white guy, that was another thing. They were very, do you notice how nice they were because of the fact that he had saved that young lady's life?
Yep.
Killmonger would not have thought like that.
No. No, and
you see what I'm saying?
No.
So I'm like, okay.
And you bring up another point, which I didn't even plan to go there, but this idea of, should you talk about going to the UN, should they have just kept like Wakanda to themselves?
Exactly.
And that's a debate that happens in the world today, right? There's places like America where we're supposedly built on this idea of like, hey, everybody can come in.
Yeah.
And then there's countries like in Europe, I want to say some of the Nordic countries like Sweden or come to mind, where they're like, no, we don't really like to let people in. We just going to stay happy and like be to ourselves.
Exactly.
And so that's
that whole woman thing. And I'll tell you something else that I always admired. When they had the fight in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
it was even.
Yes.
And all of them had people to back them up in the event that something went wrong. When Killmonger fought, he fought dirty. He fought just like they teach him here in America. Hmm.
Yeah, man. So many. What do they say that saying? It's art imitating life.
Yes.
Because it's written by people.
Yes. But I thought that it was a wonderful piece, and I must go see it again.
Yes.
And if they have dolls, and if they're created by the right people, and they look like me, then I might purchase a few. If it's for someone else or by someone else, I'm not going to buy it.
Hey, I'm not mad at you. And then one thing I didn't mention about some of the records they've been breaking records on merchandise, too, because a lot of folks feel a certain kinship or a certain energy of wanting to also wear some of the things from Black Panther, because obviously they feel like it represents some of their spirit and some of their mm-hmm. soul.
Well, you have a great day.
All right, you too, Deborah. Appreciate you.
Bye.
Bye now. Mm-hmm. And that was Deborah from Manhattan weighing in on Eric Killmonger and Black Panther. And like we've been discussing, was he a villain or was he vilified? Here's what some other people have been saying.
Eric Killmonger is absolutely a villain because, for sure, he has killed incessantly. All he knows is violence. All he knows is war. All he knows is destruction. And in everything that we see him do, he's in pursuit of those things. Those are very easily, just to open it up, those are villainous acts to want to destroy and to want to take away and remove. That is in no way heroic or even neutral.
And then there's some people saying this.
Excuse me, my opening case for Eric Stevens, I will not call him Killmonger because he was branded Killmonger by the CIA, is that he is of royal bloodline. He was ripped away from his family. His father was murdered. His father died in his arms. He was raised in the mean streets of Oakland. He made it out of that. He got to MIT. He got himself a degree. He graduated MIT at 19, went on to become a Navy SEAL, a decorated Navy SEAL, went on to work for the CIA. All of the killing that he did was sanctioned and for his country, and was all at the orders of someone else. It's not like he's just a serial killer, a mass murderer. When he returned to Wakanda, he was well within his rights to challenge for the throne. And he did challenge for the throne, and he won the throne, rightfully. And what is Eric's biggest drawback? That he wants to help his homies, that he wants to help the world, that he wants to stop seeing his people defeated? If that's a villain, then call me the bad guy.
And that's what some folks are saying. Like I said, was Eric Killmonger a villain, or was he vilified? I'm still processing my own answer to it, but I did want to see what you thought about it. Like I said, so far I do think Eric was angry. He was frustrated. He was smart. He was militant. He was revolutionary. He was an anti-hero. He was seeking revenge. He was also a tyrannical dictator and a villain in the end. But sometimes art imitates life. So I know this question can have real implications on how I and we see people in the real world. I'm starting to think that calling him only a villain is an incomplete answer and jumps to the ending without telling the entire story. That's where I'm at right now. Where are you at? Always interesting to see that one character can lead to so many perspectives. It's time to talk about It's Never Too Late. And there's a Black Panther twist to an example of that. It isn't. It's never too late. For real. We got a good example. And it has to do with Black Panther. A few months ago, wrote an article called Start Whenever, but Definitely Keep Going. Start Whenever, but Definitely Keep Going. And what I mean by start whenever is that whenever you start, you start. But oftentimes the challenging part is not getting started, but it's to keep going. But I don't want to say that to step over the fact that sometimes it can feel like it's been too late. When I was around 10 or 11 years old, I had the childhood dream of wanting to have my own talk show on radio or TV. And high school would come, didn't do anything about it. College would come, I didn't volunteer or try out for the college radio station. My work years in my 20s and 30s would come, I never attempted to do it then either. And then finally, about 3 years ago, I finally got the guts to lean in and try to be a talk radio host. And it felt a little awkward, right? 30 years had passed. I had never trained at it, never did it, never been on a radio, never had a mic in my face ever before in my life. But 3 years ago, I said, you know what? I'm finally going to give it a try. But I did at one point think it was too late. And it got me to looking up folks about when they started things. And we know some of the cool stories, like Mark Zuckerberg, right? He was in his teens. He was 19 when he started Facebook. That's the cool stuff, right? Oh, yeah, when you're young, you take risks, try stuff. Maybe you have a Facebook. You'd be like Mark Zuckerberg. Or there's folks in their 20s who do stuff. Like Steve Jobs launches Apple in his 20s. And that still feels good. Doesn't feel like it's too late. When you're in your 20s, you're exploring. You're trying things out. You may not even have a family yet. You feel like a big risk taker. And then you get into your 30s. And maybe you're like Oprah, where you start Harpo. And right, 30s feels like that turning point. Like maybe it's like do or die. I got to do it now or it's never going to get done. Because life happens after that. You got maybe kids to take care of. You maybe have aging parents to take care of. You got a mortgage. You got responsibilities, as they say. So it may feel like it's too late. But then you got folks like Jeffrey Brotman, who started Costco in his 40s. And then you got people like, who's ever had some Campbell's soup when they're not feeling well? Well, Joseph Campbell didn't start that thing till he was in his 50s. Some examples of it may feel like it's too late, but nah, it's not too late. And then you have people who do stuff in their 80s. Like, 80-something years old? You know why? Because it's never too late. Have you heard this story about this woman who embodies It's Never Too Late and it has something to do with the Black Panther?
How'd you get in Black Panther?
My agent, Cindy Butler from I Submit Talent, sent me this thing for an audition. And I said, there is no way I'm going to be in no comic strip at my age, and she was very persistent. I really have to give her credit, because she said, Miss Dorothy, you can do this. I said, no, I can't. But my grandson came over, Niles Wardell. He said, Grandma, you always talk about stepping out on nothing. Let your faith take you there. He said, now, how come you don't do it yourself? I said, what do you mean? He said, either you gonna step out there or you gonna shut up. I went to the computer and every day I practiced Mandela.
And in case you didn't know who that was talking, that's Dorothy Steele. And she began her acting career when she was, wait for it, 88 years old. At the age of 92, she landed a dream role of one of the tribal elders of Wakanda. She is the merchant tribal elder who advises the king of Wakanda. She got the role after she sent her audition tapes into Marvel. She said that where she was one of the oldest on the set, she quickly became the grandmother figure to everyone. The fact she was able to see a peak in her career this late in her life is extraordinary. According to a Time analysis, women usually see a peak in their acting careers around the age of 30, and men usually peak around the age of 46. She's peaking in her late 80s and early 90s. Shout out to Dorothy, who is still a reminder that even when we get tired out here and frustrated, so much so that we don't even feel like we can go get a cup of coffee anymore without there being problems. Or when there's times where we think we're doing the right thing, but it's not even sure whether we're the villain or being vilified. There's still some examples out there and some bright spots of folks that no matter what they've been through, even if it's 80 something years of life, that they still have a spirit of curiosity, a spirit of creativity, a spirit of, you know, maybe it's not too late. Maybe things can be different. And maybe even if things can't be totally different for the rest of the world, maybe at least in my world, for myself and my family members who are watching and learning from me, that I can still walk the walk and talk the talk and still go out and do things, because it's never, ever too late. That's what Dorothy said. Don't talk about it anymore. Just step out there. Or as Dorothy would say, or shut up. I am mad at Dorothy. An inspiration, and awesome to see one of our elders out there going from underdog to champ, even in her late 80s and early 90s.
Thank you for listening to the Gregory Neesmith Show podcast, where we get personal about the news and the culture. And as always, I leave you with my favorite quote: underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.